Good evening, everybody. Well, for those of you who haven't known, our small groups have been going on now for about a year. This is a topic that I am both passionate about. It's something that I absolutely love. This ministry that we call small groups. If you don't know what they are, let me tell you our entire history of them. One of the things that when I was moving away from my previous position as associate minister and looking for the next my next congregation, my next home, something that I wanted to be a part of and something that I wanted to work with were small groups. And so it was it was very much God that this congregation also wanted to work with small groups. And we also wanted to move towards something that looked like small groups. And so since I started working here, that's something that I've wanted to do. It's something that I wanted to present. It's something that I've been a part of. I've been a part of many different types of small groups. Some were just awful and some were absolutely incredible. I've been to small groups where they're just a bunch of college students. And by the way, those were the awful ones. And then I've been a bunch of small groups where it was cross-generational. It was older people, younger people, babies, elderly. It involved everybody. And it was incredible. It was amazing. It opened my eyes to what the church could be, what the church was meant to be, what the church was, I believe, what Jesus had envisioned his church, to be this cross-cultural, this cross-generational community of believers. And so I have to ask, and I was asked myself, and I want to present these questions to you, because over this last year of us doing small group, this is the type of questions that I've been looking at. And I believe people have been asking me, and one of them is, why are small groups so important? I don't know if you know this, but many people push away from the idea of small groups. They are very different than kind of how we have done church in the past. It's new. It's a change. And so it brings with it a lot of anxiety. One time we were talking with this eldership about small groups, and it wasn't this eldership, it was a different eldership. And just the idea of small groups, without even defining what they were, brought so much conflict and so much anxiety that we had to scrap the entire thing. Because of this idea of change, of small groups, this idea that we have to be in the same room with just 10 to 12 other people, and we have to talk about our feelings. And I just don't like doing that. I talk about my feelings enough through Facebook, right? But I have to ask, why are small groups then so important? Why must we move to something like small groups? What was so wrong with how we were doing things previously that we have to change absolutely everything and go with a new format? These are questions that I've read in many books, and I've tried to find the answers to. And many books present it in different ways. Some see small groups as the answer to a bigger problem with church. Well, it's impossible to build relationships when you're sitting in a building with 200 other individuals. Have you ever tried to do that on a Sunday morning? I know that some of us here are gifted. Gavin and Cynthia are gifted greeters. God has blessed them with the ability to meet and greet everybody. And there are several others that have that God-given gift. I also love meeting everybody else. It's kind of born into extroverts. But not everybody can do that. There are some introverts among us, and I will find you. And we will break you out of that shell. The idea of meeting new people, Doug, kind of gives them anxiety. It's not something that they really feel comfortable with, and so they just want to kind of sit awkwardly by themselves and not make eye contact. Yeah, it's only not for me. I'm extrovert, remember? I see that as a challenge. So many people, many churches, many non-denominationals, many even older denominational churches have looked at small group as kind of an answer to that problem. How do we develop in-depth relationships with one another? We can't do that on 1 hour on one day of the week. It's impossible. Many of us, Sunday mornings are the only times when we see each other. Imagine if you were married to somebody and that was your relationship. You only saw each other one day out of the week. How long would that relationship last? Yes, not at all. It wouldn't at all. Yet when we read through the New Testament, we see Jesus calling us to community, calling us to one another. He is calling us to something different. He's calling us out of this world to live in a different kind of culture than everybody else around us. He asks us to love our enemies, to serve those who persecute us. He asks us to suffer for the sins of others. He asks us to join him on mission in this world, to bring Christ to everybody else. And he expects us to form communities so that we can do that. So we have a support system together. And 1 hour on Sunday morning just doesn't cut it. So let's do small groups. Let's do something like that. Let's divide up. Let's split us, the congregation up into multiple different homes where instead of 200 people, maybe people feel more comfortable in groups of 5 to 12. Maybe then they'll share. Maybe then they'll actually talk about what is ailing them. Maybe they'll talk about their sins, talk about what encourages them, actually express emotion when discussing Jesus Christ, when discussing God. It's something that we miss. So many people believe that is the answer. Small groups are the answer to that question. What to do about our relationships? Then another question is, what role then does the small group play within the larger church structure? We are kind of used to doing things the way we've been doing them. We are a church of Christians. It's kind of what we're known for. We are known for setting up habits, setting up ministries, and we kind of keep them going forever. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. I don't want that to come off like this is a bad thing about us. I actually love this. Tradition is what keeps our culture going. The fact that we've been doing VBS, the fact that we've been doing Youth Forum, the fact that we've been doing small group or Wednesday nights for so long is incredible. When you look at the national statistics of how many congregations are still doing Sunday night service, it's incredible. But yet we have found a way for this to work. We have found a way for Wednesday nights to work. So moving to small groups wasn't necessarily a thing that we had to do out of necessity because we were suffering, people weren't coming. We were moving to small groups more as a way to expand, actually. That we can move beyond this building. That the rooms here doesn't necessarily restrict us. That the room back there doesn't confine us. That we have other homes that we can spill into. We have other places that our expansion is infinite. We can go everywhere, anywhere. We can go all throughout Ventura. I will tell you a vision that I have for small groups. I have a vision that we will have not only small groups within Ventura, not only on just the east side where most of us live, but that we have small groups on the avenue. Not just one or two, but we have 10, 20. That our congregation has small groups all over the avenue. That we have it all over Ventura. That our small groups represent this community. That not only are we spreading into Oxnard, not only are we spreading into Santa Paula, but that we are spreading to this community here in Ventura so that we can actually see what the needs are. The avenue is a scary place, right? I mean, it's something that even when I moved here, it was a place that people told us not to move to. It's seen as a very dark, very scary part of Ventura. Why are we so scared of that place? Shouldn't that is our mission field. If God was to hand deliver us a mission field, a place that desperately needs the love of Christ followers, the avenue is that for us. That is a community of people that are in desperate need of love and desperate need of service of Christ. So what does this play in our church? Small groups are not a fad. I do not see them as a fad. Many people see small groups as this pop culture, it's new age. It's something just to do because young people are restless and they complain a lot. So we'll feed them small groups to shut them up. They can sit down in the front of the church and they can have their own small groups where they can talk about their own problems. And that's not what small groups are. Small groups are not just some fad. They are not a quick answer to this problem of deep relationship, of building these deep relationships. Our small groups here at this congregation represent our answer, our move to developing deeper relationships with each other. It is an integral part of what Christ has called us to, so that you get to see what my kids are like in my home, that I get to see what you're like in your home. All the messiness that you try and clean up before we show up, I get to see all of that. And I love it. We're all messy. All of our homes are not perfect, except for maybe Jim's. But we get to see this. We get to see your home. We get to see your family. The one thing I love, and I'm gonna tie this into another a pull into doing devotionals. The one thing I love about doing devotionals, I'm gonna tell you one of the secrets why I keep asking people who haven't done devotionals to house devotionals is because I get to walk through your hallways. Hallways are one of the coolest things in a house because of pictures. You get to see your entire family. It's almost chronological order. You get to see them almost grow up in your very, and you get to see smiles and you get to see the best moments of your family's life. In a small group, everybody gets to experience that. We don't care about the house being a mess. We don't care about any of that. What we care about is seeing your family, experiencing Christ with your family, experiencing Jesus with your children, and that you get to experience Jesus with my children. When was the last time, and this is what I find incredible, when was the last time you were been in a room where you had multiple generations represented? And not only that, but you had a weekly format in which to experience that type of relationship building, where you had children learning about Jesus in the same room as grandmas and grandpas, that you saw teenagers, believe it or not, teenagers actually show up to small group, and you get to see them experiencing Jesus with not only their parents, but with their grandparents and with other people's grandparents. And they get to see what Jesus actually means to you because they're looking at you. It's a small group. They have to. Small groups are an important part of this congregation. They always have been. Small groups have always been an important part of this congregation. Many can look at church history and see that small groups were a conclusion to the end of not only the Catholic Church, or at least the dominance of the Catholic Church, but the beginning of the Reformation movement. We see that not only was the Bible starting to be translated into different languages, into people's actual languages, that people were actually reading the Bible in their own language for the very first time. And so they developed these small groups, first based on culture, based on understanding, based on their area in which they lived, but it developed. It developed into the needs of that specific culture. And it began to diversify more and more and more. And these small groups started developing into church movements, into movements of God. And some just grew anyway. These small groups, again, diversified, and it developed into American culture. We see small groups being an important part of the Christian movement in our own nation. That when people didn't agree with a specific set or a specific creed, they would split off and develop their own small group, and they would develop their own theology, their own interpretation. They would develop their own view on God. We see this as a part of our own culture. And I say all of this because I want you to know that small groups are not new. That the way our church has been doing it, this isn't something new to us. This is a new fad. This isn't something that we've just decided to do because we want to do something exciting. We want to move to small groups, and we have moved to small groups because we believe that Christ is calling us to. That he has been calling us to small groups this entire time. That he wants us to develop these deep relationships with one another and in many ways as we possibly can. And if we look throughout Scripture, we see God doing this throughout the entire Bible. We see that he calls 12 disciples, even though he has a much larger group of disciples to call from. I always find it incredible. Now, I know the significance of the number 12. I know why he chose 12. But I always thought, wouldn't it have been great if God had called 40? I mean, I could work with 40. 12? What if I don't like one of them? Right? I mean, 40, I get a chance to kick some people out. But 12? 12 seems like a desperate number, especially since Jesus is trying to start a movement, and he chooses only 12 dysfunctional men. And look what Jesus was able to do with that. But even beyond that, we see God working with just 80 people in exile in Egypt, Jacob's family as he moves there, just 80 people. And look at what God was able to do with those 80 people in Egypt. We see that he has called the weak, the old, the farmers, the cowards, the shepherds, and the proud alike. And through them, he achieved wonders. I love how God chooses the weakest of humans. How he calls farmers to become prophets. How he calls simpletons to become kings. How he calls shepherds to become kings. That he is always looking for the small. He is always looking for the least amongst humans to do miracles, to do something marvelous. I consider splitting the Red Sea an easier task than working with someone like Samson. When you look at the people that God works with, in the areas in which he works with them, splitting the Red Sea, that's probably to God. He's like, well, I created the sea. I know how this works. It just does what I tell it. But humans, they never do what I tell them. Samson, man, read that story. God is able to do great things through the weak, great things through the small, great things through those who don't believe in themselves, who believe that they're cowards. Gideon is a fantastic story. How it begins, and he is hiding from people. And yet this angel comes to him and says, you are a mighty warrior. Just stand up and assume that role. And he still doesn't believe this angel. He doesn't still believe God. It takes him and it takes God a process to understand just how God works in this world. And just look at what Jesus was able to do through those 12 men. We are 2,000 plus years in the future and we're still talking about them. We still read about them. That Jesus took 12 men and formed them into a force that will forever alter their reality. That will forever alter human history. Every part of the world talks about Jesus in some form or another, which people don't see that as a miracle in of itself, that we're still talking about Jesus. Jesus didn't write any books. He didn't write any letters. What we have of Jesus comes through his disciples. And it began with those 12 men. And look what God was able to do. In John chapter 6, starting in verse 66, this is it's at the tail end of the passage I read for the communion this morning, but it's also a further conclusion, a further understanding of what we read in the young adult class this morning. We're looking at Jesus as you would look at an actual human being. And I know that seems simple at first, but many of us read Jesus kind of like you would read about Gandhi, all right? You see every time you see those red letters, you kind of read it in a monotone, flat voice. And we always take those truths, those stories that Jesus says, and we kind of take them out of context. And we look at them so specifically that we kind of forget the bigger picture that Jesus is drawing. Seeing a man with actual emotions speaking to the Pharisees, arguing with the Pharisees, or speaking with compassion and love to the paralyzed man. Jesus had been talking this entire chapter about what life truly is. If you remember this morning during communion, I read the passage that many of us go to. It's very drastic. It's very dramatic. I feel like God is trying to get a point across to them, and he's using the most violent words he possibly can. And so he ends with, fine, I want you guys, you need to understand, if you want life, then you're going to have to eat me. You're going to have to drink me. I'm going to have to become a part of you in a very real way if you want to have any hope at life. And he ends by this description of what the Spirit does in starting in verse 61, going on through 64. But this is at the very tail end of this, starting in verse 66. This is after Jesus has been speaking for quite some time, and this is the reaction of the crowd. After this, many of his disciples turned back and no longer walked with him. So Jesus said to the 12, do you want to go away as well? And Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. And we have believed and have come to know that you are the Holy One of God. I want you to notice first that Jesus doesn't ask his disciples to go out there and get them back. He doesn't tell his disciples, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say it just like that. Go back out there, get those disciples back. We need more people. Jesus is comfortable losing people. He is comfortable with that small crowd, that small network of people that he can depend upon, the people that he can be honest with. You see, small groups allow us to accept one another's shortfalls in a very real way. We can be honest within a small group that accepts us for who we are. Jesus held nothing back and was comfortable with accepting losses. Jesus was honest with these people. Now, again, you have to put your feet in the shoes of Jesus. This man is starting a revolution. This man is starting a movement. Wouldn't you want as many disciples as you can possibly get? Wouldn't you want to say the correct things? It's much like how we kind of do politics here and now. When we vote for a president, we're voting for someone who has a staff of people making sure that every hair is in the right place. Every word they use has been picked out for dialect, picked out for region. Every politician has been groomed so that the people they're speaking to feel more comfortable with this politician. Jesus dispenses with that. He looks at his disciples and says, "Will you leave me as well?" And Peter makes one of the greatest statements. And he doesn't put his feet in his mouth like usual. And he admits who Jesus is. See, small groups allow God's strength to be seen more clearly. Small groups allow God to see, allow people to see his strength more clearly. When he picks the weak, when he picked those 300 men in the story of Gideon, when he picked those 80 people and sent them to Egypt in exile, when we see God working through David's 40 mighty men, only 40 of them, when we see God choosing just 12, when Noah and his 8 passengers, when Paul and his companions were all chosen to work with God, we see his strength. We see his strength through Paul, Titus, Timothy, Epaphroditus. We see it through Apollos. We see it through Apollos. I've been known to make mistakes. That's why God's strength is seen through me, hopefully. In small groups, we get to see God working through us. And this is what I love so much about it, is that you guys get to develop relationships with my children, that they grow up and they know your name. Michelle Washington comes to our small group, and I love that she brings her grandchildren, Mikey and Layla. Our kids love Layla. They see her almost as a sister. That relationship wouldn't exist if it wasn't for our small groups. The fact that I know Michelle Washington's name is a testament to what small groups are capable of doing. If I were to poll you now, would you be able to tell me the names of any member of our young adult group? If I were to poll our young adults, could you guys tell me the names of the older people that you're not related to? Or an Allstott. You can't pick an Allstott. If I were to poll you, could you give me more than 10 names of people that go to church here that you're not related to? Small groups give us an opportunity to see God working through others. They allow us to see God working through their weaknesses, and that people get to see God working through our weaknesses as well. God works through small groups. He works through our weaknesses. Finally, let's go to Galatians. And this is my last one. The lesson's yours. In Galatians chapter 6, this is our small group's benediction. This is a statement that he makes, that Paul makes, that I just find so powerful. Galatians chapter 6, starting in verse 1. And I want you to read this through the eyes of small groups, how Christ intended small groups to be. Brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. For each will have to bear his own load. We must know a burden before we can attempt to carry it. We must know who can carry the load the best. Some burdens are incompatible with other people, but we have to know you first. If I were to put the load of my life on you and not knowing you first, that load may crush you, or that load may be nothing to you. But I don't know if we don't have a relationship first. But he commands us to carry one another's burdens. That includes relationships, in-depth relationships, beyond just knowing each other's names. Knowing what your life is like, knowing what your story is, knowing who you truly are, seeing all those pictures in the hallway and being able to, from that, know who you are, to know those stories that you're holding back. We must carry something because we all have baggage. We all have baggage. We all have something that somebody else can carry. And keeping that in yourself is the biggest symbol of pride, specifically in how Paul views what the church should be. He says, if you believe that this is big enough for you, that you don't need anybody, then you're going to suffer because you will then be the only person to carry your load. And that's not how Christ intended the church to be. Christ did not intend the church for a bunch of individuals to come here and live their life individually and then go home as individuals. He didn't build the church to be that way. He built the church so people, so mistake-ridden, sinful people can come here and can, in a place that will accept them and love them, be honest with themselves, be honest with others, and be honest with God, so that, for the specific reason that others may take their burden, may come to them and give them a kind word or in some way help them. But we have to know who we are first before we can do any of that. The truth is, small groups are here because we need one another and we need help. And I know those are simply said, but have much bigger truths behind it. We need one another. We need each other's failings. We need each other's successes. We need each other's stories. We need to hear about your life. And if you keep that in yourself and you keep that from us, if you keep that from me, then you are hurting me and you are hurting my family and you are hurting one another. We are here so that we can hear your story, so that we can hear who you are, the struggles, the sins, all of that, so we can be your family, so that we can be your community of supporters. For we are all sinners in the hands of a loving God. Will you please, first, if you want to know any more information about small groups, please ask me or Keith. We are developing the next phase of what these small groups are going to be. They're going to start on August 5th. On August 5th, we're going to meet back here at the church building. And then that following Wednesday, we're going to go back into our house churches. So if you have any questions, if you want to know anything about small groups, please, please let us know. And let's stand and let's continue worshiping God.